My name is Michael O'Connell. I'm here today with Ann Wooten and Bailey Smith, the co-founders of Pop-Up Archive. Good morning, or good day, actually. It's good morning for you, and it's good day for me.
Hi.
Hi. Now, you're on the West Coast, right?
We are. We're based in Oakland.
Okay. And you just got back from South by Southwest. I assume that you were there to talk about Pop-Up Archive. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what Pop-Up Archive is and what you're trying to accomplish with it?
Sure. So Pop-Up Archive is a web application that makes audio searchable leveraging technology for automated transcription and entity extraction, and as a result, making that audio accessible to many more people than ever before. It started as a master's thesis work when Bailey and I met at the School of Information at Berkeley, and we've been in this area ever since.
So who is it? Who are you doing this for? Who do you see as your audience?
Definitely journalists and generally media producers, but we're also looking at small archives that have really interesting audio collections. We think it's this really valuable proposition to bring all these people to one table and enable them to share media with one another.
So just so I get an understanding of this, how does your product work? What does it do? Is it just transcription or does it do something else?
Sure. So anyone using Pop-Up Archive has the option of adding one or multiple audio files and organizing those files in sort of buckets or collections that through which they can track certain projects. But whether or not they choose to organize, there is a metadata that's automatically created, and that's what makes the audio searchable. And that does include the transcriptions. It also includes the when I mentioned entity extraction software technology, that means being able to identify keywords, people's names, places, popular themes or subjects, and then there are options to kind of go beyond that in terms of relational data, keeping track of people interviewed or interviewers, hosts, producers. The sky is the limit when it comes to just how much you want to track about your audio. But the problem is that most people don't have the time to put that type of effort in themselves. And so automating the process makes audio, which otherwise is just kind of as opaque as the file names in however many nested folders you may have on your desktop. We're trying to break that mold.
So is it then something that a journalist would use behind the scenes to sort of organize and to search the data that they've collected through audio, or is it something else?
Absolutely, yeah. We've been talking to producers for a while now about their workflows and kind of the often cumbersome steps that they go through to back up certain media but not other media and share that media with teams they may be working with, or just reaccess it for their own purposes, and kind of the trouble that they face in doing that effectively and quickly. But then absolutely we see this as being kind of an API for all unfinished content that anyone can search, and there will always be privacy concerns, but there's a lot of public material out there that sometimes the best way of accessing audio today is doing a YouTube search and hoping that you find something close to what you're looking for. And there's just, that material could be accessible in much more effective ways.
So is there a search aspect to it? Is that what you're sort of saying?
Absolutely, yeah.
And how does that work? Are you just pulling on the metadata for that?
We are. We have, a few different ways of indexing the material and storing metadata. Based on how we've kind of identified its data type. Searching the automated transcriptions and keywords and kind of weighting metadata depending on how much there is.
So what inspired you to come up with this?
I guess that would be our work with the Kitchen Sisters. We were master's students at the University of California, Berkeley, in the School of Information. And so we were working on a final thesis. And Anne met up with the Kitchen Sisters at, I think, some event, a party maybe, and got to talking with them, and she says, you know, like, I am interested in digital archiving, and they said, oh, that's wonderful. We have all this material, and we're losing it, and we'd love it if you could come on board and try to help us build something out of what they call their accidental archive, which is a really charming way to describe, like, the material they've gathered over a 30-year relationship of creating audio for radio. And Anne started off trying to help them get a grant for digitization, which helped us realize that there's this difficulty for smaller producers. There are archival systems out there, but they're cumbersome, I think, for a small shop to get into place and to start using. And we wanted to help them find a way to make that process easier, and sort of came to the realization that there wasn't anything out there that was, like, really built for them, and that we could step in and make that happen.
Okay, and so what did you end up doing for them?
So for the Kitchen Sisters, we actually augmented open source software called Omeka to build plugins that support broadcast media in particular, and that let them back their material up at the Internet Archive as kind of a trusted digital repository from the kind of preservation and access standpoint that mm-hmm. so many granting agencies are coming from, as well as publish material to SoundCloud to engage with their growing audience there. We've sort of shifted away from that model now, although we're really happy to have released that software and be a part of that community. We found that even that, you know, as kind of the simplest, you know, WordPress-esque approach to archival software was still a little bit too complicated for your average producer, your average consumer. So that's really the need that Pop-Up Archive is looking to fill.
So what were you doing at South by Southwest? Were you just sort of rolling this out and saying, here, this is what I've got, or this is what we've developed, and, you know, what type of feedback were you getting from people?
South by Southwest was awesome. So we, first of all, we really love Austin. It was a great time. It was really exciting to be there, and it's so warm, and there's so many interesting people. We were there to give a digital archiving workshop. So we sat down for 4 hours with a group of people that were just all interested in archiving. And yes, we demoed our site for the first time. Right now it's in beta, so if you'd like to use it, you need to, you know, send us a request, and we'll get back to you as it becomes available. But we got to work with a few, like, really great producers and watch them in action for the first time and get some user testing done and see how they interact with the product, which was really exciting. And I think we definitely learned a lot in Austin that day, and we'll be incorporating that in our work as we go forward.
So what type of feedback were people giving you?
You know, I mean, feedback that a lot of web-based products get during their first round of beta testing, I think, you know, just this page isn't intuitive, or you need more explanation here, or the user flow doesn't feel quite right, and you can't really see that happening until you're watching over someone's shoulder as they interact with it. So it's invaluable to have that kind of feedback early on.
Yeah, it's difficult to sort of anticipate all of the ways that people are going to use things. There are plenty of examples, in the online world of products being rolled out and then being used in a very different way than the creators had imagined them, for both good and bad, I guess.
Exactly. And we're still very much in the process of testing a lot of hypotheses around that and thinking about, you know, we got into this, you know, working with the Kitchen Sisters on content that, you know, the value of which was abundantly clear to us. And we love all the different content creators we've encountered over the course of this process. But I think the question is then, you know, how do you most effectively make audio searchable, and what are the most appropriate approaches for doing so?
Now, you had a night foundation backing on this?
We were winners of the Knight News Challenge data round in 2012.
And what has that been able to make you or allow you to do?
It's given us a generously long ramp to kind of continue attacking this problem and considering, like I just said, the different approaches for providing the type of service that we want to provide, and hopefully getting it right. So we're working, you know, there's the two of us, and then we're working with the Public Radio Exchange to build out the platform, the repository of content, the web application, the search functionality.
So what is your thinking at this point? Is this something that you're creating that people can access? Is this something that people are going to be able to, you know, purchase and use in their own business with their own material?
I think we have several different potential markets that we are fond of for different reasons and continue to sort of bat around for those reasons. But I think fundamentally we're excited to be creating, an API for all of the audio that's kind of falling by the wayside right now. And there are some really exciting efforts happening, in public media and in general, whether the DPLA, the Digital Public Library of America, is building an API for all sorts of incredible, archival and library content from across the United States. Somewhat similarly, the public media platform is the result of, five major public media organizations coming together saying we need a way to systematically distribute public media content as it's produced. And that's great. That's great for the produced work, but there is definitely this long tail of all this other content. And I think that, we're kind of focusing on building that API and building a search functionality that works well with the content we've attracted so far and will continue to attract. And then, consider from there just who to focus on when it comes to providing services, because right now I think there are a lot of groups of people that we would like to please, and we realize that you can never please everyone. So we'll do the best we can.
I can see how this could be really useful. Actually, I was at the Library of Congress yesterday, coincidentally, doing some research on a story, and I had to access some audio files from the Vietnam Veterans Project. I'm writing about a Vietnam vet for a freelance story, and it just struck me that they had all these. They have all of these audio interviews that they've done over the years, and so much of that is, use the word that you use, which is opaque. You have the name of what's on the disc, but you don't necessarily have the information short of, just accessing the file and going through it all. So, just from a search and a functionality aspect of it, I could see the immediate use for something like this.
Yeah, I mean, your story sounds like similar stories that we've heard from a lot of other producers and journalists and content creators. There's
a little bit scenario.
Yeah, there's a radio station in New Hampshire that we talked to, but really it could be anywhere because it's a classic scenario, the obituary scenario, and they knew that they had audio of a particular senator sitting in the station somewhere, but because of the staff turnover that they've had, they lacked that institutional memory, they lacked that path back to the audio and had no way of searching for it.
Right.
And then just, the fact that the technology really is just now, I think audio is kind of a latecomer to the web in a lot of ways, even behind video, hence the YouTube scenario where people are searching a video site to find audio content. For any number of reasons, but it's been hard, if nothing else, to store this stuff and serve it up consistently without, a significant cost. And so the fact that, increasingly there's no reason not to save everything is appealing, but it I think it's only worth it if you can also search that material. So search is a really big piece of this problem.
And I actually work at a radio station, a radio news station, Federal News Radio here in Washington, D.C., and our focus is covering the federal government, and we produce, tons and tons of interviews, every week, that the challenge for us is how to translate that audio content to the online environment in a way that people can use it. And, you know, we'll have 5-7 minute audio files available for people of interviews. But, you know, do we pull out snippets? Do we pull out things that are really interesting? I mean, short of us, going through and listening to the whole thing to pull out bits, it can be really time consuming. But knowing that there also is a lot of value in the content that's there, just finding a way to make this easier and more available to your readers, you know, that's incredibly valuable and incredibly useful to getting your website, increasing the traffic, because people want to get this material.
And that's nice to hear. We definitely feel you on the right now. Creating information about your file requires a lot of manual labor, and anything that we can do to cut time out of that process is really what we're interested in. If you went to the site today, for instance, and you drag a file into the site, and this transcription bit and keyword extraction will happen in the background. But you'd also be able to customize the metadata about your file, and we have a simple form that makes that possible. And I think that's one of the barriers. You start organizing something, and over time, things change. The way you do it changes. If we can make that happen in a standardized, easy way. Every time you want to add the name of an interviewer, you do it in this one field, and that's fine. Every time you add the name of an interviewee, it's in one field. It's all routinized in a way that I think can make this whole process a lot less painful.
So where is it you want to go next with this? What's on the horizon for you?
Well, I think the South by Southwest workshop was the very beginning of a lot of testing and many iterations to come in the next few months as we hammer out the rest of this technology. We're pretty excited about expanding to include video content seeing just how robust of an API we can develop and getting content to kind of test that case and prove that point. We have a lot of testing to do, and then, I think we'll probably be reassessing later this year, as I mentioned earlier, thinking about which communities are best to focus on in this domain and how to grow the service from there.
Do you have a timetable as to when you think you might be able to roll this product out?
Well, so people can request invites to beta test the service okay. on our website at popuparchive.org. We'll start sharing the service with people towards the end of this month in beta test mode. I think that we will be further publicizing the service and offering a more stable release, this spring. And I think, Pop Up Archive will be up and fully functioning, this year.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, definitely. I think, there's an endless list of features that we want to continue to roll out, and the timeline on that is a little bit longer depending on the feature, but in terms of a baseline product, definitely, yeah.
So were there anything beyond your experience with Pop-Up Archive at South by Southwest, any other things that you saw there that kind of impressed you that you took away from that?
Well, we went on an awesome bike tour of the east side of Austin as part of, there's a project funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting called Localore with the Association of Independent Radio and public media radio station partners. Maybe there's some television stations as well. Public media station partners across the country that are working with producers. One of which is at KUT in Austin, called Austin Music Maps. Uh-huh. And so they had a panel at South by, and then took a few folks on a bike tour to some of Austin's greatest and not necessarily best known music haunts and secret spots. And that was really cool.
Yeah, it ended up with a two-step lesson, so that was a good day.
Yeah, cool.
Love two-stepping.
It's always nice when you're able to go out on these business trips and then find something else that's just fun to do.
Oh, yeah. We make a point of it.
Is there anything else you want to talk about as far as, audio, pop-up archive that you want people to know?
We love seeing kind of the content that trickles up or down to us or comes through the cracks as people hear about what we're trying to do with the service.
Having worked on this project, you know, what are your observations on what's going on, you know, certainly with audio in particular, about in trends in journalism now?
And one of the things that we think is really going to be useful for the service, there's a tendency for there to be fewer full-time reporters in a newsroom and more freelancers, and those freelancers have several jobs. So they, you know, maybe have audio that they're creating for, you know, three different programs. And for them, organizing that is more problematic because, you know, they may have something that's on a shared drive at one station and then other material that's elsewhere. And it's helpful to be able to unite that for them, like, in one personal collection. So I think that can be really helpful. And that's an interesting trend, I think, that there's movement between stations. And like Anne said earlier, like, there's some loss of institutional memory because there's been a lot of turnover in newsrooms.
So now, you said before that you were your master's students at, was it California? And, you know, what experience in journalism do you have sort of beyond developing this? Do you see yourselves more as, you know, developer people? I mean, you know, what is your approach to journalism at this point?
We both came to the School of Information looking to kind of bone up on our technical skills because we both come from humanities backgrounds. I did a bit of newspaper and magazine journalism when I was in college and beyond. And Bailey worked on a radio documentary, actually. And, you know, we were interested in coming at media from a new perspective and, you know, being kind of frustrated by the current prospectus for media as we knew it, and I think being at the iSchool provided a really useful and necessary change of perspective and set of skills that we wouldn't otherwise have in terms of being able to. I mean, we had to take programming classes as part of our curriculum, but just understanding the design cycle and understanding. You know, engineers and being able to talk about technology in ways beyond what we could do when we came into the program.
Yeah.
What would you say to somebody who wanted to pursue a more technical career in journalism? What should they be looking for in a school, in the types of opportunities they should pursue?
You know, I know at Berkeley, my husband actually went through the journalism program and graduated the year before I did from the master's program at the J School at Berkeley. And I managed to get over there and take a few classes and really enjoyed it. And they have a digital media track, which is great. And I don't know, while you're in school, if you're in school, take a programming class. I mean, there's intro level classes, and take whatever language is available. I think Python is a good place to start, or, you know, like learn some JavaScript for front end programming. And there's all sorts of ways to do that. There's sites online like Code Academy where you can go and like just learn some basics. CSS and HTML2 are really good to know.
Yeah, even if you're not in journalism school, I think J schools are increasingly offering really great programs in digital media and those types of skill sets. But there are a lot of resources out there. There are free classes. There are meetups and pop up classrooms. You know, certainly in cities across the United States. So that's a good place to start.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I've been talking to Anne Wooten and Bailey Smith, the co-founders of Pop-Up Archive. Again, where can people find out information about this?
You can check out our website, popuparchive.org. You can request an invitation to try out the Pop-Up Archive service and transcription stuff there. And you can follow us on Twitter at Pop-Up Archive.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of the media. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or find out more information about us at itsalljournalism.com. We'd like to hear what you have to say. If you have topics you'd like us to cover or suggestions about who to interview, email us at editor@itsalljournalism.com. Also look for It's All Journalism on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @alljournalism.